Last year at the 2015 NHL draft, the Calgary Flames made perhaps the biggest splash, if not one of the biggest splashes, when they acquired Dougie Hamilton from the Boston Bruins. They didn't give up anybody on their roster to bring him in, which is why the draft is so important, because they gave up not one, not two, but three draft picks to acquire Dougie Hamilton. And that's one of the reasons why the draft has become such a hotbed for movement. So you got that. They made moves around the draft. They traded up in the second round to bring in Oliver Schilling. And when it was all said and done, a lot of people were raving about the work the Calgary Flames did at last year's draft. Well, this year, they go into the 2016 NHL draft with everybody wondering what the heck they're going to do in net, what the heck they're going to do on the wing, and if they're going to move that number six overall pick, if perhaps they're going to move up, move down, or do they select somebody with one of their highest picks in team history? Right now, we welcome you to the Flames Nation Draft Preview Show. Pat Steinberg along with you, and for the next hour, we'll be going through it from a Calgary Flames perspective, mostly a Flames perspective, but also kind of take you across the nation networks, because so many Canadian teams picking high, Toronto, Vancouver, Edmonton. We'll get some perspectives from there as well. But not, my name is Pat Steinberg, and very proud to welcome in a couple of people from Flames Nation. Now, you may be familiar with this gentleman's voice because he's been on the station many times before. Also, one of the most recognizable writers at FlamesNation.ca. That's Kent Wilson, who joined us on the roundtable portion of this show, which will take up a good chunk of it. Mr. Wilson, how are you?
Good, Pat. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. And then we also have a new voice on the program. Very excited to welcome Ari to the program. The what are we calling you? The site manager at Flames Nation?
Yeah.
Okay. So site manager at FlamesNation.ca. And are we going with just the single name? Are we going with the last name? How are we doing it?
You can go. Ari Yanover.
Okay. So we got Ari Yanover with us as well. And I'm excited because we got a lot to kick around. First of all, FlamesNation.ca, once we get to the draft floor, once the draft proceedings get going, one of your headquarters for draft coverage and off-season coverage. We're moving up to free agency, so I encourage you to check back multiple times on FlamesNation.ca throughout the draft, throughout the offseason, because not only are you going to get news as it happens, but you're also going to get up-to-date instant analysis and all kinds of source materials. So I've had the privilege of working with Flames Nation for the last number of years and back with them for the last year or so. And this is kind of cool. For the first time since, I think, 2011, we're doing a Flames Nation-branded show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan in my hotel room in Minnesota, Ari. Kent and I huddled up around a desk and did a couple of shows at the 2011 draft in St. Paul. So this is first time since 2011 we've been able to do this, so that's a lot of fun. Let's start with it. We'll get to the actual picks. We'll get to the actual, you know, who are they going to select at number six? Who's a good target for them? We'll get to that a little bit later on. What I want to focus in on is how busy this draft might be from a Flames perspective outside of the players they might select. Ari, last year we saw Dougie Hamilton acquired in what was a huge, huge kind of franchise-defining move, and a lot of people wonder if there's not another one in store for the Flames this year, whether it be in net, whether it be elsewhere. What are you anticipating? Do the Flames make another big splash at this year's draft?
I think they might try, but I'm not sure we're going to get anything like quite to the magnitude of Dougie Hamilton. That is probably not something we can expect year to year, because as you said, that was massive. Like, that's not the norm.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not happening this year. I think for the most part, like as far as like first round is concerned, they pretty much stick where they are. They've got their three second round picks to use as currency. I think we might see something there, but that might be as big as we get.
Yeah, I agree. We actually discussed this recently on the site, and my take was if they make any moves, it'll be with those second rounders and hopefully for some help in net, because they need a lot of help right now.
No doubt. And the question then becomes, who do they go and acquire? Who's their target for potentially upgrading their goaltending position? The guy that we all thought in Freddie Anderson is gone. He's now a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and so there's one goaltender that is no longer out there. But there's Marc-Andre Fleury, there's Brian Elliott, there's Ben Bishop's name is out there, Jimmy Howard's name is out there. There's a number of names that are still out there, but Ari, Freddie Anderson was the ideal candidate. He would have been their number one, right?
He has to be. I mean, he fits in with the age group of this team. He's not crazy expensive like their names you listed. Like Fleury, Howard, Bishop are all cap hits in like $6 million range almost. And some of them not Bishop, but their ones are signed for like until they're approaching their 35th birthday. So are those the right guys for the Flames to acquire? Like you're locking yourself in to a commitment to a declining goaltender who's already really expensive. So out of that list, I would go with, if they went a different direction with another veteran, Brian Elliott, because he's only a 2.5 million cap hit. He's a bit older, but he's got starting experience. He's a good goalie, and he works as a great stopgap if you need that for this year.
And I guess that's the point. Do they, you know, if that number one goalie isn't available, do they think about going the stopgap route?
Yeah, they definitely could. And Brian Elliott's definitely an excellent target. The issue is, does St. Louis even bother to trade him?
Yeah.
I mean, he was their number one guy in the playoffs, and he had actually an elite season, which is, he had a really odd path to becoming a starter. It's been long and winding, and he was very mediocre at the start of his career, but it's interesting to see how he's kind of grown in his 30s into this great starter. So if I was the Blues, I wouldn't trade him, but yeah, if he's up for grabs, the Flames should give them a call too.
Right, and that's the goaltending conversation, because we know the Flames could very well be busy in that regard at this weekend's NHL draft. It's your 2016 Flames Nation Draft Preview Show. My name is Pat Steinberg, joined by Kent Wilson and Ari Yanover from FlamesNation.ca. It is one of your headquarters for pre-draft, during draft, after draft headquarters for the 2016 NHL Draft, free agency, and more. Check out FlamesNation.ca for all kinds of content. And guys, that's kind of the goaltending situation, and if the Flames were to acquire a number one goaltender, it would definitely constitute as a big splash. Well, as we talked about at the outset, last year the Flames made a big splash at the draft too. They acquired Dougie Hamilton. I want to go back. I want to look back at that Dougie Hamilton trade from 1 year ago. The Flames, it kind of came out of nowhere. Nobody really saw it coming. They go out and bring in Hamilton from Boston for a first round pick and 2 second round picks. I remember exactly where I was. I was on the bus getting a ride from the hotel to the arena prior to the first round of the draft that year, and it was a shocker. I was stunned to see it. I'm curious how you guys look back. How do you look back, your reaction to the Dougie Hamilton trade 1 year ago?
What? That was pretty much like, we just saw rumors coming in, like hearing Dougie Hamilton's on the move, and the Flames needed a new defenseman, but I was looking at free agent targets at the time, like Mike Green or Chris Neerhoff or whoever. And then suddenly Hamilton's on the move. 2 minutes later, Hamilton's a Flame. It's like, wait, what just happened? Is this real? I'm just instantly looking up, like he instantly approves the blue line. Now it's panicking because, oh God, he's really good. He was a ninth overall pick just a couple
what
years ago.
What did they
ago.
Give up to get him?
Yeah, what's yeah. Now what did we lose? Because you're looking at the reactions all over Twitter, and Boston fans are like praying for like Goodrow or something.
Tony Goodrow, yeah. Sean Monahan.
TJ
yeah.
Brody.
Yeah. And it's yeah. like, okay, I don't think they would have given up any of those guys, but I don't see how this trade works if they
otherwise,
didn't
yeah.
give up one of those guys. So like, it was like a foregone conclusion. The first was gone. It had to be at that point. But the rest of it, then it's just 2 second rounds. I still consider it highway robbery. I can't believe like 3 picks. Because second rounders can be valuable, but I think they're more valuable in trades like that than for the actual draft itself, unless like someone really incredible falls down that low.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's great to have them so you can make moves like that, not necessarily to pick players.
Yeah, they're nice currency to have. It's funny, Christian Rotis, who writes for Flames Nation, after the a while after the trade happened, he went to NHL EA Sports mm-hmm. and tried to make the exact same trade.
And they wouldn't let him.
And the computer had one of those really snarky little replies back to him, like, give us a break, this is not going through.
Yeah.
So that's my take on the trade. It was, even though Dougie came in and had a bad first month, and it took him almost all season to win back Bob Hartley's trust, I think. And even then, I don't think he was being deployed properly,
yeah.
but his results after that first 4 to 6 week period were just outstanding. And I think he's just going to get better. So
yeah, like ignore that initial bad first month. Cause everyone had a bad
everyone
first
was,
month on the thing, except for like Goodrow.
Yeah.
But the Flames got the then 22-year-old top pairing defenseman for 3 picks. Like, ignore the results that came after. That alone is just insane.
It was amazing to me that people were talking about him as a bust, even into January and February. I'm like, first of all, okay, he did not have a good start to his season. He wouldn't deny that. Flames won't deny that. Nobody in this room is going to deny that. We all know that he struggled to start his tenure with Calgary. But, okay, so he struggled to start his tenure, and then he got more and more comfortable, and he became more and more a part of it, and he started to become far more proficient on the power play. And to the point where I think in March I wrote a piece at Flames Nation talking about
yeah.
how there's no reason why guys like Chris Russell should be playing more than he was, and he should be the third most, because we know that Mark Giordano, TJ Brody were the two best defensemen on the team last year. Dougie Hamilton was clearly the third best defenseman on the team, and yet
He got fifth spline. Yeah, exactly. Fifth guy minutes.
He was getting number 5 minutes. Sometimes Engelund was playing more than him. Sometimes, you know, like this doesn't make any sense. So, and a new coach now, I think that definitely changes things. But no, I'm with you. I thought that it was a pretty incredible. And I just remember what is so amazing to me as we look back on the Dougie Hamilton trade from a year ago. What was so amazing. So when I got the tip as to what it is and I put it out on Twitter, I just remember the, because every once in a while when you get a big scoop like that, your Twitter blows up, right? And it's immediately. You're getting like, hey, it's over capacity and stuff like that. And I remember the when it started to refresh, it was either capital letters from Flames fans saying, holy cow. And then when it got picked up by Boston fans, it was like, are you kidding me? Like, this is what we just gave away, a franchise defenseman for 3 picks. And who knows what those 3 picks turn into. But to do that from a Flames perspective, that I think we'll look back on that one now that he's signed and a long-term member of the team. I think we'll look back on that deal as one of the better ones in Brad Treliving's tenure.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be Kiprusoff big in terms of impact, but it could be close. I mean, you just don't get to trade for players like that very often, especially at the age he's at. Sometimes you get them when they've passed their peak and they're reaching 30 and they... But I mean, his best years are still to come.
Yeah.
I was like Treliving announcing, I'm here. Because before I was like, he'd only traded Drew Shore for Corbin Knight, got Curtis Glencross for a couple of picks. We didn't know what to expect from him. And they're like solid small moves. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly out of nowhere, just the like
big
the biggest
splash. Spot.
Yeah. I don't know if we can ever expect something that big again, but he sort of set the tone.
Yeah,
you're probably right. And because of that, it's probably unfair to look at Marc-Andre Fleury or Jimmy Howard or Brian Elliott as being as big a splash as Dougie Hamilton was 1 year ago. But just knowing where the Flames are with their goaltending position and just knowing how bad it was last year, I still think if they're able to land somebody that they can go forward with as a number one for a number of years, I think if they're able to do that this year at the draft, it constitutes as more than just a ripple. I think it's a pretty big rock thrown into the river.
Yeah, it's goaltending's an isolated position. Like, your guy can either single-handedly save you a game or cost you a game. It's
or
not
a
like
season,
that, yeah.
For that matter, as we've seen, right? So
it's not like that every time, but it's a massive position that you get like very little flexibility in because you only have the 2 guys on your roster mm-hmm. throughout. So you have to get it right or else, pretty much.
If they don't, by the way, it's the Flames Nation Draft Preview Show around the table. Kent Wilson, Ari Yanover. My name is Pat Steinberg. Kent and Ari from FlamesNation.ca. If they don't come back with a goaltender, or if they don't go out and... I wonder about another deal, because nobody saw Dougie Hamilton coming. There was only slight rumors there might be a holdup in contract talks, but everybody was still thinking that he was probably going to re-sign in Boston. And the next thing you know, he's gone. And I wonder if there aren't players like that again this year, because we knew about Cam Talbot, we knew about Martin Jones, we knew about a few other guys that might get dealt. I wonder if there's a winger like that available for the Flames. I wonder if there's a big name winger that we haven't thought about that all of a sudden becomes available and maybe they can hone in. But if they don't come away with a big name player, if they don't use their bevy of picks in the top 60 to acquire a roster player and they just end up taking the 4 players in the top 60, do we come away from this draft looking at it as a disappointment, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's good to have a lot of future assets in the organization, and 3 second rounders, I mean, 3 lottery tickets like that can be beneficial. Maybe sometimes they turn out to be Marcus Granlund, but you can find really good value, especially if you have a lot of shots at it like that. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
Yeah, like they're just good currency. Like, if you don't spend them to trade up, you're still spending them on a relatively high pick. And especially with like 35th overall, like that's just outside of the first round. Guys who should be first round picks fall out all the time. One of them will probably end up there. So it's a matter of if the Flames take him.
So, and it's funny that you mentioned, because you had mentioned it earlier, the kind of probability of a second round pick turning into an NHL player, it does gradually go down, as you'd expect as you go down the rounds. So what in terms of first round to second round, what are we talking about in terms of, you know, the probability of a player selected there turning into a regular NHL player? Like, is it, how much of a drop are we talking about?
I've looked at it in the past. I haven't looked at it in, I don't know, 5 or so years, but when I took about 10 years worth of draft data, it was you know, it started to drop pretty precipitously outside of the first round, even at about 25.
Okay.
In the first round, you got down to about 20 to 25% of the picks taken become useful NHLers. And it stays like that. It drops a little bit, but up until the 40s and 50s. And then once you get into like the third and fourth round, there's not a lot of change from there until six, seven, to tell you the truth.
Right, which is why you, Ari, are so big on the whole concept of using those second round picks as currency, because you're going to be able to get a roster player perhaps who's already established in the NHL, whereas number 35, number 54, number 56, their chances of turning into a bona fide NHL are much less than what they'd get in the first round. And in this case, you might be able to maximize having a lot of picks to turn it into something nice in a return for your group.
Quality trumps quantity every time. So, like, even last year when they had two third round picks, like, you could have gone maybe a couple decent prospects, or you can trade up and get Oliver Shillington, who was initially projected to be a first round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I'd rather have Oliver Shillington than whoever the Coyotes selected with those two thirds.
Yeah, yeah.
So a very interesting time surrounding the Calgary Flames as we enter the 2016 NHL Draft. We'll have full coverage from the draft floor here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, and full coverage on flamesnation.ca. Instant analysis, instant breaking news, source pieces, opinion pieces, flamesnation.ca, one of your headquarters to check out as the draft continues leading up to it, after it. As the site manager, Ari, what can we expect throughout the draft in flamesnation.ca?
Throughout the draft itself?
Yeah.
We'll definitely have, like, as soon as we can, little profiles on every single kid the Flames pick. Like, we want to know who they are. We want to know what position they are. Like, see if there's a general theme going. Like, in 2014, it was a lot of big guys picked, and in 2015, smaller, more skilled guys were picked. So we'll see if there's a general theme going with them, see what positions are targeted, because defense looks fine now after last year, but the wings are kind of thin. Stockton had problems scoring last year, so are they going to target more offensive guys? So we'll be taking a look at that and giving impressions on where everyone might fit in, especially if they end up trading for a roster player and how he fits in.
Very cool. And once again, flamesnation.ca, one of your headquarters for 2016 NHL draft coverage when it comes to the Calgary Flames. Ari Yanover is the site manager at flamesnation.ca. Kent Wilson, the former site manager and contributor now at flamesnation.ca. And my name is Pat Steinberg. Flames Nation draft preview show continues. These guys are going to take a little bit of a break. They'll be back a little bit later on when we get into a little bit more specific on what the Flames do with that number six overall pick, who they might be targeting. But around the corner, we go across the nations to Vancouver, to Toronto, to Edmonton, because those three teams pick before the Flames get to the podium at number six overall. Why do the Oilers control the draft, and who will the Canucks select at number five? Do they trade down? That and a whole lot more as we take you across the nation network next. This is the Flames Nation Draft Preview Show here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Who should the Calgary Flames select at number six overall, and who will the Flames select at number six overall? That's a little bit later on as the flamesnation.ca draft preview show continues. My name is Pat Steinberg, but right now we're going across the nation network because four Canadian teams will head to the podium before the Flames get up there to make their number six overall selection, and we kind of want to get a little bit of a thought from across the nation network as to what some of these teams ahead of the Flames are selecting and where else to start but number one overall.
Toronto.
A few months ago at the NHL Draft Lottery, we found out the Maple Leafs would be selecting number one overall, and at the time, we all thought that meant they'll be selecting Austin Matthews with that first overall selection. But is that what the Maple Leafs are thinking heading into this weekend? Let's go to theleafsnation.com, where Sean Reese joins us right now. Sean, appreciate this. Is there any chance the Maple Leafs don't select Matthews first?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you look at the various top 30 lists and what everyone is saying, like 8 out of 10 lists have this guy number one. You listen to what people like Bob McKenzie and Elliot Friedman say, they say he's going number one. The fact that he's in all likelihood a first line center in the NHL, something the Leafs have been lacking for years and years. Put it this way, like, I would be willing to pretty much bet my life savings that they take Austin Matthews first.
What is the excitement level around Leafs Nation, knowing that Matthews will be joining the team here very, very soon?
It's still pretty high. I mean, you saw it at its peak when the Leafs won the draft lottery and that first realization sunk in. Now people are just kind of, they're ready to get the show rolling. They're ready to make it official and just go on from there, but it's still pretty high. I mean, he signed, I think, some sort of partnership with Bauer Hockey. People are getting all excited there because the gear he was wearing was blue and white, so people are excited. They're ready to get their Austin Matthews jerseys and all that, and they're ready to get him on the ice and get him playing for the team.
Is the anticipation that he steps in right away and makes an impact with this team?
I mean, I don't expect him to jump in and be a point-per-game player, but I do think that, like, based on how skilled he is, based on his production level at the World Championships and in the Swiss League this year, and based on looking at past first overall picks, like, guys like John Tavares and Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, I mean, these top picks usually jump in right away and are fairly productive. Like, I think it's fair to slate him in for 50, 55 points at least, maybe a bit more, maybe a bit less, but I think that's roughly what you're looking at, which is pretty good.
Sean Reese is with us from the LeafsNation.com. Any chance we're talking about the Maple Leafs trading down or trading away that number one overall pick?
I mean, unless maybe Edmonton calls up and offers them Connor McDavid for some crazy reason, I don't think so. I mean, it would take basically someone offering a very young first-line center equivalent to Matthews, which it's not happening. So pretty much no.
Okay, fair enough, and that makes sense. So final question for you. We already saw the Leafs trade away one of their picks in this year's draft earlier in the week to acquire Freddie Anderson from Anaheim. They've got two picks in the second, two picks in the third, two picks in the fourth, and two picks in the sixth, and have a pick in every round of the draft. Do you see them using some of those extra picks to kind of package up as currency to help better their team right now?
I think it's a very real possibility. I mean, Pierre LeBrun mentioned this week or last week that he expects many of the Leafs' depth draft picks to be in play and for the team to look to do that to improve the roster via trade. I mean, I think they're still going to hold on to most of those draft picks and try to keep the draft pick total count that they have in the double digits range. I think they're at 11 right now. They're going to want to keep that up around 9 and 11, but I mean, I definitely think they're going to be looking to improve. I mean, they finished 30th last year. They've got to get better. They've got roster spots to fill. So I think depending on who's available, if they can get their hands on a younger-ish guy with some upside, whether that's a forward or defense, I don't know who specifically that would be, but I definitely expect them to explore that possibility.
You can check out Sean Reese at theleafsnation.com leading up to the draft, following the draft. The Maple Leafs, of course, are going to be one of the busiest and most looked at teams at the 2016 NHL draft. Thanks for doing this today, Sean.
Thanks for having me.
Edmonton.
A lot of people point to the Edmonton Oilers as the team that actually controls the first round of this year's draft, because at number four overall, and with a consensus number three ahead of them, who they select could very well determine where a number of other teams go after them. We welcome in Jonathan Willis now from OilersNation.com, and Jonathan, I'll ask you that question. Do the Oilers control the first round of this year's draft?
I generally agree with that. I think that these rumors we've heard about Columbus potentially moving the number three pick are really interesting. I'm a little skeptical that Jarmo Kekalainen is going to pass on the player there, but anything's possible. What the Oilers do have is sort of command of that second tier of the board. You know, you kind of laid out that the first three picks are all kind of consensus picks at this point, but after that, the draft gets a lot flatter in the 4-10 range, and Edmonton is in the top spot there, so they really have the ability to dictate what happens.
So in saying that, and we'll get to their potential picks and who they might hone in on just a second, but a lot of people look at it and say, man, the Oilers need help on their back end, and if they could move that number four pick for a defenseman that could jump in and play right away, then maybe it's something that they should explore. How realistic is the possibility of that happening, though?
Well, that's exactly the right way to frame it, because I think everybody would pretty much agree that if Edmonton could move the number four pick for the right defenseman, that would be a good move for the franchise. You know, if you draft a player there, you're going to end up with somebody who's probably going to take a few years to develop. You don't necessarily know what you're going to get. Whereas if you can trade it for a young defenseman who could augment sort of the Taylor Hall, Connor McDavid core, that would be great. The difficulty arises in narrowing down who that top defenseman actually is. It's very hard this time of year to believe the rumors that are out there. You just don't know what's true and what isn't.
Yep.
And they're real, but when you look around the league, there really aren't that many players who sort of fit the bill. And you kind of mentally cross off teams that, you know, might be willing to move a defenseman in the here and now for a draft pick, and you end up with a very short list.
Jonathan Willis of OilersNation.com with us. So let's assume that the Oilers do select at number four. They don't move that pick, and they go to the podium and make that selection. There's a number of defensemen they could pick there. There's the two consensus next forwards after the top three. Who do the Oilers end up selecting at number four overall?
I think what we've seen the last little while has been Tkachuk sort of emerging as a consensus number four. And maybe even to the point where some have suggested that he's challenging for the top for a top three position. He does sort of fit the Peter Chiarelli mold of team, if you think about the Boston Bruins under Chiarelli. Matthew Tkachuk is that kind of player. He's very smart, but he's big and strong. He plays sort of a power forward game, more so than really anybody else in the draft this year. So I think that's who they would select.
If they go down that road and if they select another forward high in the first round, does it get to the point where the Oilers have too many of these highly touted forwards to fit in with their salary cap going forward?
Yeah, that's a legitimate concern. And you can question whether or not that's really the right decision. And I think that's maybe part of the reason why the idea of the Oilers trading down kind of has a bit more currency this year, because you can imagine a scenario where, you know, if they feel Tkachuk is the best player available at the number four slot, they're going to take him. But you can imagine a scenario where they trade down from, say, four to six or seven and pick one of those three highly touted defensemen that are on the board this year. And along with that, pick up some secondary assets that they can then use in their pursuit for defense this summer.
Okay, final question for you, and that's on the rest of the draft. The Oilers have eight more picks after the first round, so knowing that they had another rough season, do they use some of those extra picks and maybe try to use them to better their roster right now?
I think so, both because they have ammunition and because they underachieved last year. Those are both factors, but most significant for me is that this is Peter Chiarelli's best shot at overhauling the team, remaking it in his own image. A year ago at the draft, he did quite a bit, but he was handcuffed a fair bit by salaries that were still on the books. Players like Ben Scrivens, players like Teddy Purcell, players like Nikita Nikitin. Those contracts are mostly gone this year, so he has a bit more room to play, a bit more space to play with and rebuild the team. So I think we're going to see him sort of rapidly turn the Oilers into the kind of team that he wants to run.
Jonathan Willis will be all over Oilers Nation, surrounding the draft, into free agency, and a whole lot more. Jonathan from OilersNation.com joining us here today. Thanks for doing this today.
Yeah, my pleasure, Pat. Take care.
Vancouver.
If the Edmonton Oilers control the first round of this year's draft, then what does that mean for the Vancouver Canucks? The Oilers draft at number four, the Canucks right after them at number five overall. We welcome in Jeff Patterson from CanucksArmy.com in the Vancouver province. So knowing that, Jeff, who do the Canucks target with their number five pick?
Well, I guess a lot of that does depend on, you know, what the Oilers do with that fourth pick, whether they keep it and use it or if they trade it. And you know, if they trade it, what does the team that then picks fourth do with it? So, you know, the Canucks will certainly be interested onlookers there if they hold on to their fifth pick. Right now, Pierre-Luc Dubois seems to be the guy that they covet. Jim Benning made a trip halfway across the continent late in his playoffs just to get one last look. And again, you try to connect dots here. You know, Benning goes out of his way to see Dubois play in the playoffs. He didn't make an appearance at the Memorial Cup, which was a flight away, an hour flight to Red Deer, even though Matthew Tkachuk and Ulevi are there. Now, I asked Jim Benning about that, and they were holding some meetings here in town, and he said, look, we've got scouts there, so it's not like the Canucks turned their back on the Memorial Cup. But he said, I feel like I've seen Matthew Tkachuk play 50 times and just didn't feel the need at that point to get into Red Deer one last time. But again, connecting dots, it's interesting that he would make the trip to see Dubois. You know, this is a team that obviously for years has talked about a succession plan for when the Twins are finally done, and they've got 2 years left on their deal. Dubois fits the need up the middle. I think they look at him as a centerman and, you know, a scoring center, a guy that you could build around. They've got Brock Besser from last year's first round, who had such an outstanding season at North Dakota, and he's a winger who can score, but they certainly need a guy in the middle. So I think Dubois is the guy that they covet, but again, it comes down to what happens at four, and is Dubois there, and does that make a guy like Tkachuk a consolation prize? And I think that they would certainly take a long, hard look at Tkachuk.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there really isn't much in the system in the way of a blue-chip defenseman. So I guess if Dubois is off the board at five, you know, now you have to look long and hard at trading down, perhaps, and if they still think that they could get the defenseman that they want, but they could add an asset in a deal. You know, that kind of stuff is all in play, and Jim Benning has said as much. So I think they're keeping all avenues open. I think you have to when you're the 28th place team in the National Hockey League and you've got lots of holes to fill. But as we sit here right here right now, Dubois seems to be the guy that fills the need for them. It's just a question of whether he's still on the board.
Let me explore that concept of trading down. Canucks don't have a lot of picks in this year's draft. They don't have a second rounder. They don't have a fourth rounder. They only have multiple picks in the seventh round. So we're not talking about a huge bevy of picks. Is perhaps acquiring another pick or two and trading down something that you think Benning would be open to?
I do, and it's something I wrote about in the province on Sunday, is that after that fifth overall selection, they have one of the next 135 picks. So there's going to be a lot of sitting around at the Canucks table. It's that third rounder that you mentioned. So, you know, Jim Benning was hired as a guy who could work his magic in scouting and at the draft, and he's had two pretty successful drafts when you look at the fact that, you know, the guys that they have taken in the first round, Virtanen, McCann, even though McCann's been traded, I mean, he's played in the National Hockey yep. League. Trampkin late last year got into the National Hockey League. So, you know, in two drafts already, three guys that they have picked have skated in the National Hockey League, and then they've got Thatcher Demko, the goaltender, and Besser, as I mentioned, who are sort of the top of their prospect pool. So, you know, it looks like Jim Benning has come as advertised, but you can't work your magic if you don't have picks in the draft. So he has talked about that yes, he'd like to reacquire a second-round pick. He gave up the second-rounder to get Gudbranson in the McCann deal, but it's a question of how does he go about that, because when you look at the Vancouver Canucks, they've got a number of young players, but I don't think they're interested in peddling them. And then it's, you know, what do they have as assets if they wanted to make a deal to get something in return? You know, would they look at trading a guy like Yannick Hansen? Is there some value in Alex Burrows? You know, they couldn't unload Chris Higgins last season. I don't think anything's changed there. And, you know, Dan Hamhuis is set to become an unrestricted free agent. I don't think that there's a lot of value in his rights at this point, although we've seen other guys move their rights at least. You know, we'll see what happens there, but I don't think you're looking at anything close to a second rounder in that regard. So the Vancouver Canucks would have to get awfully creative if, in fact, they thought that there was a deal to be made to add some draft picks in that, you know, second or third round where, you know, they may still be able to get a player that is the kind of guy that they could not build around, but certainly could be added to their stable for years down the road.
When it comes to Canucks news and analysis, check out Jeff Patterson on CanucksArmy.com and the Vancouver Province. Jeff, thanks for doing this today. We'll see you in Buffalo.
Looking forward to it.
Want to thank that man, Jeff Patterson of CanucksArmy.com and the Vancouver Province, Jonathan Willis from OilersNation.com, and Sean Reese from the LeafsNation.com across the Nation Network as we get set for the 2016 NHL Draft. My name is Pat Steinberg. This is the Flames Nation Draft Preview. Who do the Flames select at number six? Who should they select at number six? That's next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. The Calgary Flames have four picks inside the top 60 of this weekend's NHL draft, including number six overall. So what do they do with those four picks? Do they make all four selections? Do they move them? Specifically, what do they do at number six overall? Welcome back to the FlamesNation.ca Draft Preview Show. My name is Pat Steinberg, and let's welcome back our two panelists as we continue our roundtable with Kent Wilson of FlamesNation.ca, the former site manager and now contributor, and the current site manager, Ari Yanover from FlamesNation.ca. So guys, so much talk about whether or not the Flames can move up from number six to say number three. A lot of talk that maybe Columbus isn't going to select there, or talk about the Flames moving down and maybe acquiring more picks or something like that. But as we move closer to the Flames getting to the draft floor and getting to number six overall, what's the anticipation? Are we anticipating they go to the podium and make their pick at number six?
I think they do. I think it's going to cost too much to move up. Like, say, I don't think it's worth it to move up to four or five, not to mention you'd be dealing with Edmonton and Vancouver, so you probably don't want to do that anyway.
Right.
But to move up to three, like, that's probably Jesse Puljujärvi's spot. Is he worth it? He'd be great to have, but Columbus has a need for NHL centers. Well, Monahan's not going anywhere. Bennett's not going anywhere. Backlund is an NHL center, very good defensive one. So is Backlund worth Puljujarvi? And then throw in, is Backlund plus the sixth overall pick worth Puljujarvi? Right. I don't think that's the case.
No.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with you. Like, I would love to see the Flames move into that number three spot. I think Jesse Puljujarvi is an extremely tantalizing player. I think he would be a perfect fit with the Flames. I just think moving up to that height in the draft is just going to be too prohibitive to do in terms of the cost. And Ari, something you said in the first segment of the show and in talking about the Flames potentially moving down is we didn't see a lot of that last year in the draft. We didn't see much moving down, whether it be the Flames or any other team. So you're not really anticipating that either.
No, and I think if the if they're considering it this year, it might be into falling into a trap of overthinking it, because you have Alexander Nylander is pretty much the consensus like sixth guy at this point. But then there are a couple of other guys, like maybe Clayton Keller or Logan Brown has drawn his name in there, but I would not do that at six. Or maybe one of the top three defensemen being talked about, Chikrin Ulyalovi and Sergachev.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're thinking like, okay, well, you can get one of those if you trade down a bit. A, who is going to give up enough assets worthy of moving up a couple of spots so you move down a bit and take one of the leftover guys? B, like, they've talked about having a ledge after six players. So just take the guy that you like there. You don't need to overthink it. You don't need to get an extra second rounder. You've already got three. What else are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
Just take the guy you want.
I think the only thing another team could come to the Flames with that might entice them to move down a little bit is taking bad money. So if someone, say Buffalo, comes along and says, we'll take Dennis Wiedemann, we'll give you another asset, and we want to move up to six, they might think about that.
Right. I never thought about that.
That's... Yeah, because cap space is very, very precious for the Flames moving forward.
Here. Boy, is it ever. We don't know what Gaudreau and Monahan's numbers are going to look like, but we know they're not going to be low. So you're right. Cap space does all of a sudden become very, very precious. Okay, so it's Ariane over Kent Wilson, Pat Steinberg along with is the Flames Nation draft preview show. You said something really interesting. So you think Nylander, in your eyes, from the research you've done, Nylander would be the preferred number six pick for you?
Yeah. I'm assuming Tkachuk and Dubois are going four and five, or if one of them falls to six, I would take one of them. But I don't think either Edmonton or Vancouver is going to draft a defenseman that high. Like, Vancouver just traded for Eric Goodbranson, so they're probably happy right now, and they got rid of a center to get that. So they're probably after Dubois. Tkachuk just won a Memorial Cup, so Edmonton's probably, and he's like big and everyone loves him, so they're probably salivating at getting him.
Yeah.
So that leaves Nylander as that last of that group of three. And like guys like Keller, even Tyson Jost, have risen their stocks, but they've been on the smaller side, and that's not a detractor for them. We know small players are fantastic. But Nylander is bigger. He puts up the numbers. He led Mississauga like by a wide margin. He's probably a safer pick, but that doesn't mean he's not going to be like incredibly offensively dynamic. He's also a right shot and fills an instant need in the Flames top six. He probably won't step in immediately, but pretty soon.
And why not? You were like, I wouldn't do Logan Brown at six. Why not Logan Brown? He's big. He's a center. He's 6 foot six. Why not Logan Brown though?
Are you familiar with Nick Ritchie from 2014?
I am. Yes.
It's pretty much that, where someone huge and with talent rises up and they're intriguing. But if there are better players available, like Brown did not lead the Spitfires in scoring. He was about as far back as the second guy on the Steelers was from Nylander.
Okay.
And to me, that's one of the main things I'm looking for. Like, is he a leader in junior? Because then you tread into Sam Gagne effect, where was he just a passenger on the line, or did he do the create? Was he the offense? If you're picking at sixth, and you have a guy who was the offense of his team available, you take that guy.
Yeah, I looked at a lot of the CHL forwards across WHL, OHL, and I kind of looked at them from another number of angles, weighted for NHLE, which is the NHL equivalents of their scoring according to their league, how much they scored their team's offense. So I call that percentage of team offense. Mm-hmm. So it tells you if the guy's driving or kind of a passenger. And there's a ledge of six guys who were clearly above the rest of the league, and Brown was the last guy on that ledge. So he is probably a pretty good prospect, but he wasn't in the Dubois, Tkachuk, or even Nylander kind of space, right?
So what about a defenseman? Because Nylander, Brown, all those guys we just talked about, forwards, what about a defenseman? Because very likely, if Tkachuk goes four, Dubois goes five, the top three goes the way we think it is, Flames would have their pick of that really tightly jammed group of defensemen. There's Sergachev and Windsor, there's Chychrun and Sarnia, and the guy that we all saw go deep into the Memorial Cup in Ulevi in London. What about getting a defenseman? Is that something the Flames would be looking at after drafting a couple highly touted ones last year?
I think they can look at it, and I've heard Craig Conroy on The Fan, and I think he's talked pretty glowingly of Ulevi. That said, I think the Flames have a greater organizational need up front and on the wings, especially because they have Shillington, they have Rasmus Anderson, they have Hickey. Those are three pretty good prospects coming up. They don't have anything like that. With Emile Poirier taking a big step back in Stockton this year, I think if they rate these guys equally, meaning the forwards and the defensemen, mm-hmm. they will, I think, go for the forward.
Yeah, you take best player available, but if you're holding these guys in about the same ledge, take the guy you actually need and will likely contribute to you sooner. Because then you also still, in the NHL, you've got Giordano, you've got Brody, you've got Hamilton. Mm-hmm. You look relatively set on defense. Like, the bottom needs some cleaning up, but that will come with time. And who knows what they'll look like on defense by the time, say, Ulevi's ready to step in the right. NHL. I mean, you could trade him for help on the wing, for future help then, but why do that if you can just get the help on the wing right now, if you think Nylander is about the same level?
And in terms of, you know, projecting prospects, I find defensemen are harder than forwards. Sometimes you see a Zach Bogosian go really high and he becomes a pretty good defenseman, but not a guy you would go back and take at six overall, right?
Luke Shen went high and kind of is a Hickey. Bottom 3-4, yeah. 4-5-6 guy, yeah. Yeah, Thomas Hickey's another. He went sixth overall, whatever it was, to LA. So, and you know, at first, I've kind of gradually over the last number of weeks come to your side of the fence, because at first I was like, no, the defenseman, and I was like, you know what, it probably, like, where are their highly touted prospects at forward? Who's their highly touted prospect at forward right now? And we can't really.
They're all playing in the NHL.
Exactly.
Is it Shinkarak? They didn't even draft him.
Yeah.
Is it?
He's
Jorge?
Their best forward prospect right now, Shinkarak. Well, Mangiapane.
Mangiapane? And he's a fifth round pick from last year. Yeah. So, I mean, their cupboards looked very, very full for a number of years at forward. And now, thanks to them being so full and those guys projecting to be really good NHLers and turning into that in Bennett, Gaudreau, and Monahan, cupboards are bare again at forward, or a whole lot barer than they were. So I think I've been convinced over the last number of weeks that maybe forward is the better way to go. And when you're talking about pretty skilled guy in Nylander, you think he was kind of the driver? He was the guy mm-hmm. driving the offense for his team?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he did well in terms of percentage of team offense. Yeah. So.
And he led his entire team by scoring. And there was talk of Michael McLeod. I know McKean's has him really highly rated and everyone else still has him going in the first round.
Yep.
But when Nylander was off in the World Juniors, McLeod just stopped scoring.
Hmm. Yeah, very interesting, and definitely something to keep our eye on heading into this weekend. As we start to finish off our time together, Kent Wilson from FlamesNation.ca, the former site manager and current contributor, and the current site manager, Ariane, over with us. My name is Pat Steinberg. This is the Flames Nation Draft Preview Show. As the Flames go into this year's draft, it's kind of interesting to look at the two prior drafts the team has had with Brad Treliving and how much they kind of juxtapose one another. You take a look at year one in 2014, and Sam Bennett was drafted first, but then, you know, we weren't really all that thrilled, and a lot of people weren't jumping up and down about the picks that came afterwards. Hunter Smith and Mason McDonald, not to say they were bad picks, but it wasn't what you would call a really exciting and super positive draft, at least in comparison to what we saw last year. Last year, even though they traded away three picks to bring in Dougie Hamilton, so that was huge and extremely positive. Then with the picks they did have, they picked Rasmus Anderson, and a lot of people happy about that. They traded up a few picks later to get Oliver Shillington in the second round. Andrew Mangiapane had a great year in Barrie. A lot of people excited about him. Like, it seemed like 2015, there was a whole lot more excitement coming out of the draft than opposed to 2014. And I don't know, Ari, it's kind of interesting to see the differences between the two drafts that this team has had under Treliving.
I have my I can't confirm this. It just feels like, because Treliving had only been on the job for a couple of months leading up to his first draft.
Yep.
So, and Burke had been GMing before.
Yep.
So I'm like, he probably was helping out quite a bit to get him involved in his new team. And I have a feeling that 2014 had more of Burke's fingerprints. I can't verify that. Like, who knows? Maybe the Flames will go for a bunch of behemoths this year. But just from off 2 years, it feels 2014 was a bit more Burkey, And 2015, True Living had been on the job for a year, and he knew what he was doing for his own. So he would act on his own at that point.
Yeah, for sure. I think the Flames were talking a lot about size leading up into that draft, and I think they were kind of worried about, one, they were going to be a young team moving forward, and two, they had Johnny Gaudreau, who is, okay, we got to protect this sort of mighty mite that's on our roster. And I think they've sort of gone away a little bit from that thinking, seeing how he's sort of flourished without Brandon Bolig's been on the team and Derek Englund's been on the team. But I think we don't have to worry too much about, you know, getting the 6 foot five tough guy anymore.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, the 2014 draft, Brandon Hickey's turned into a pretty good prospect for him.
He's smaller. Bennett and Hickey were the smallest picks of the 2014 draft, and they're the most exciting pick.
Yeah, and for that reason, I'm kind of wondering, because 2015 was seemingly overwhelmingly positive. I mean, there weren't a lot of negative things being said about the Flames coming out of last year's draft. A year later, I think we still look back on it as being very, very positive with the players they picked, the acquisition of Dougie Hamilton. And I wonder if that line of thinking and kind of some of the stuff we saw Tree Living Engineer last year, if maybe that's the norm going forward.
I'm going to hope so. It was funny talking about Anderson and Shillington from last year. A couple of guys who actually just got hired by the Florida Panthers, Josh Weisbach being one of them.
Yeah.
They developed something called PCS model, which was a way to look at prospects and project how they're going to do. And both of those guys were like, where they were projected to go and versus where this model showed them going, they were huge value picks. So it was amazing to see the Flames pick up both of those guys. So yeah. Hopefully they're looking for stuff like that again this year.
I'm hoping we see a trend, but I remember the 2011 draft was Feaster's first, and I came away from that feeling really optimistic. Like, say what you will about the guys who've been traded away, all five picks from that draft have played in the NHL.
Yep.
And then we went to the 2012 draft. I'm excited. Like, are they going to continue this? And you get, like, Patrick Seeloff in the second round, and, like, it's not fair to him because he's had his own struggles off the ice. But at the same time, it felt like a different way we were going. Mm-hmm. Say what you will about Jankowski, we don't know. He's barely pro at this point, so he gets the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
But right now, Gillies looks like the standout of that draft, and that's one compared to the year before where they got like five good picks.
Yeah.
When did they pick Keegan Kanzig? Was it
third
that?
Round?
Right.
That was 2013, round 2013. Yeah. And that was, because you come up from the high of like, oh, three first rounders, it's exciting. And then you go into the third round, you're like, okay, like, Oliver Bjorkstrand's still on the board, so let's get him. Okay, who? I've never heard of this guy. Who did you just take?
Yeah.
Look up his stats. Like, okay, so he can't score in junior, but he's very tall.
He's very, very big.
Well, and we'll see what Kanzig turns into as he goes into his first full year of professional hockey this coming year. But yeah, it certainly seems like 2015 was kind of a different philosophy for the Flames at the draft, and we'll see what type of philosophy they come out with from this year's draft. This is the Flames Nation Draft Preview, and I want to say special thanks to our roundtable panelists, the site manager at flamesnation.ca, Ari Yanover, and Kent Wilson, the former site manager, current contributor at flamesnation.ca. And Flames Nation is one of your headquarters for the upcoming draft, during the draft, after the draft, leading up to the draft. What can we expect on the website, Ari?
We will get, as soon as picks are made, we will be working instantly on little profiles on everyone so you can learn just like who they picked, what position they were going after for. Are they big? Are they small? Do they score a lot? Are they stay-at-home defensemen? And like what rounds they get picked in. And we'll notice any general trends and maybe we'll talk to them a bit.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Thank you so much, guys, for joining the roundtable. That was a lot of fun. Once again, Ari Yanover, Kent Wilson from FlamesNation.ca, and make sure you check out FlamesNation.ca, not just for the draft. There'll be plenty of coverage for the draft, but free agency, offseason, and beyond. There is always content being pumped out 365 days a year over at FlamesNation.ca. Well, thank you for tuning in. We had our panelists. Also want to thank Jeff Patterson, Jonathan Willis, and Sean Reese. Across the Nation Network, the 2016 NHL Draft is going to be very, very eventful, and we'll have full coverage of it right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.